Next case is Tyler LePage versus People of the State of Colorado, 2011 SC 325. Argument is set for half an hour, 15 minutes per side. Mr. Hardy, is that, are you ready? Okay, please tell us your name when you start your argument. And Mr. Crane, is that, do the same. And as a petitioner, Mr. Hardy, you'll have to keep track of your time. And for those folks that have come in that are new, we do use iPads, and that's how we keep our briefs, notes, and link it to Westlaw, so we're not surfing. So let's proceed.
May I please court? James Hardy, attorney number 38173 for the petitioner, Tyler LePage. I intend to stay 5 minutes for rebuttal. The issue on certiorari is whether the Court of Appeals erred in finding no reversible error where the trial court failed to give the jury the verdict form for the lesser included offense required by the evidence. The Attorney General claims the record should prevent this court from reaching this issue, and I will address that claim, but first I would like to address the merits. The statute here, Mr. LePage, was entitled to the lesser included offense of obstruction of a peace officer at trial. The jury was instructed, and clearly the trial court intended to provide the verdict form for obstruction. But what happened here is the court inadvertently failed to provide that verdict form.
Okay, the defendant asked for the verdict form, right? And it was submitted by counsel?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And it just didn't show up?
That's correct.
A special verdict form?
The verdict form for the lesser included offense, yes.
Yeah. So it was submitted, was requested, the instruction was given. How do we know whether or not the record just has misplaced it? Don't we presume that actually it was, since it was asked for, it was given? There wasn't any refusal to give the verdict form, was there?
No, there's no refusal to give the verdict form. And that's why I read this error as an inadvertent error by the trial judge. Just to clear up the record there, it was requested, and the form itself, I believe, was actually submitted, so to speak, by the prosecutor. There's a discussion on the record in the transcript about the prosecutor going down and grabbing a form for the obstruction. The evidence that the verdict form for obstruction was not given here is when you look in the record in the pleadings file where you would expect to find the verdict form for the lesser included offense. Instead, you find a verdict form for a third degree assault, an offense that was discussed in the jury instruction conference, but was not instructed on. It was defense declined to give it as a non-included lesser offense. And conversely, you find the obstruction verdict form in the record stapled to the tendered and refused instruction for a third degree assault.
Mr. Hardy. Morning. When was that discovered?
It was discovered on appeal. There's no discussion of it in the trial record. I may have been the first person to discover it.
So it wasn't within days, obviously. Transcript had been prepared. It was probably several months later.
To my knowledge, I'm the first person that's seen that error.
Okay. And my point is, was that several months later?
Several months later, certainly, once the record was certified.
I know you kind of want to address this second, but I'm concerned about how do we make a factual finding that it wasn't actually, it seems like you're asking us to make a factual finding, are you not, that form was not given basically from circumstantial evidence in the record. Can you address that? Because the trial court has never said, oops, I goofed up.
True. However, the error here, which I believe is inadvertent, there'd be no other way to know that this error occurred. This is the record in which you find, essentially, the papers got shuffled the wrong way and no one said anything about it. If you don't take this case on the face of the record, and I would submit this, the Attorney General has given no affirmative reason not to, then this sort of error could not be reviewable.
Well, couldn't you remand it back to the trial court to make a determination as to what happened? I mean, there's got to be a reconstruction of some kind, is there not?
I don't think we can ask the trial court or the trial jury the questions that we would need to ask to know whether or not they
are clearly not the jury, but the trial court would have to make some kind of factual finding if it was remanded back or there was a request, would they not?
Well, my reading of the record is that the trial judge did not know that the error occurred, so I don't believe that the trial judge could speak to that point.
All right, go ahead.
Can I follow? Oh, please.
You go ahead.
I just wanted to stay with that a minute. Do I understand it right that what you have is the instruction form for one crime, one lesser offense, the one that was rejected, stapled to the back, or the one that was accepted, stapled to the back of the lesser included offense that was rejected?
Correct.
So there's no markings on the verdict form, is that right, to indicate that it was refused?
There's no markings on either of the verdict forms, either the one, the obstruction form, or the third.
And so is the question for us, in terms of a reconstruction, or what we believe happened, have to do with when and who stapled that form to the instruction that was rejected rather than to the instruction that was accepted? And so are we faced with the problem, was that done in preparation for appeal rather than at the time of trial? And let me ask one other question. Surely those were not stapled together in any way, either for the instruction that was given to the jury or the one that was rejected. The verdict form was not stapled directly to it at the time they were given to the jury. That's probably true, isn't it?
Well, let me premise this by saying, Justice Coates, that I really have no way of knowing any of that in terms of whether it was stapled or was handed to the jury, the timing of the stapling. I don't put much stock in the stapling, to tell you the truth.
Isn't that the only reason, though, we think that this was not given to the jury and was put together with the rejected instruction because they were stapled together?
No, I think that my reading of the record is, you know, being an appellate practitioner, I pick up the file, and if I want to see the jury's verdict, I go directly to where I would expect it to be, which is with the jury instructions, and with, in this case, a jury instruction or a jury verdict form, which the jury clearly filled out because it's marked. And the form for the lesser included offense, if that's involved in the case, is the next form that I see submitted back to the court with the one the jury marked. So,
but isn't that because that's the way the record is prepared for appeal? At the time the instructions go to the jury, aren't verdict forms generally together in a place rather than connected by staple to the instruction to which they apply?
Well, I don't know what the practice might be in this particular courtroom. I could speculate and say that the practice is that they staple the verdict form for the lesser included offense that's been rejected with the tendered and refused instruction that's been rejected and put it up off in another pile so it doesn't get confused with the other paperwork that's going to the jury. And, you know, perhaps that is actually what happened here, just they transpose the verdict forms. I can't speak to the compilation of the record. All I can tell you is that on its face, the verdict form for the obstruction appears taken with the tendered and refused jury instruction, and the verdict form for the non-instructed offense appears where you would expect to find the one that went to the jury. I understand that the Attorney General claims that this is probably error in the composition of the record, but I've yet to see anything from the Attorney General through two rounds of this affirmatively showing that. And I believe the burden is on the Attorney General at this point, especially after the Court of Appeals all agreed that this error occurred, to make an affirmative showing that this was error in the compilation of the record rather than error during trial. Turning briefly to the merits, now, this, as it's been discussed in detail in the briefs, this is a matter of first impression. And I believe the rule should be here that the omission of the verdict form for a lesser included offense is reversible, at least absent a clear record of no prejudice.
And what do you base that on? Now, you're asking for a remedy of reversal of the conviction, right? Whereas our law basically, as I understand it, says we have to give credit to the jury's verdict and try to uphold it, right, if it's based on the evidence. You're not talking about the evidence. You're talking about some kind of a possible assembly problem of the record. And we've got cases where transcripts aren't available and the record has to be reconstructed. I mean, you know, the rule is not an automatic reversal, is it?
Well, Justice Hodges, I think you're talking about two different things. That if you don't accept the error occurred, if you don't accept the error occurred, then we're not even in the realm of reversal. I agree.
Yeah. I'm just asking where the presumptions go. That the jury regularly performed its duty and filled out the verdict form for the crimes that they found convictions for.
I understand. What I'm suggesting in terms of whether an error occurred is that this record on its face indicates it did. And that we have no way at this stage of knowing whether, of determining now whether this error, which by all appearances was inadvertent, actually occurred. My premise is if this error occurred, it should be reversible absence evidence that there was no prejudice.
Why are you willing even to take the position that the error might not have occurred? I mean, from looking at the record, it seems to me that there are these two verdict forms and there's nothing else.
There's an omission of the LIO verdict form, right? So how can you can't, the stapling has almost, what does the stapling have to do with it?
No, I do not see ambiguity in the record, and I do not see the stapling matters in terms of
okay, but just to, yeah, just to make sure, there, this jury verdict form is no place. There's been some discussion about it, but it wasn't part of the jury instructions or the verdict forms that came back and were placed into the record.
The instruction for obstruction exists with the tendered and refused jury instruction for third degree assault. But not on this record, that is not what went to the jury and came back.
Right. And we know what went to the jury and came back because it's segregated from what was discussed. Let me come at it this way. When I was a trial judge, somebody gave me something I wasn't going to give. I had a big old stamp, slap it, declined. Something like that. There's nothing in the record.
There's a stamp on the jury instruction for third degree assault that says it's been tendered and refused. But the form of
third degree. Okay, go ahead.
Doesn't have any markings on it. And there's no markings on the other verdict form.
Okay, so there's a difference. The judge clearly showed what he wasn't going to give, and this wasn't in that category.
Correct.
Okay.
I'd like to at least briefly touch on the merits before I try to reserve some of my time. Justice Hobbs, to try to address the second part of your question, the reason I believe we don't defer to the verdict here on the greater offense is twofold, and it relates to this court's pretty recent precedent. First, in People v. Leonard in 2010, this court looked at correct jury instructions and an incorrect verdict form. And what this court found in that case was that the confusion based on the inconsistency between the jury instruction and the verdict form was what gave the court pause, which what resulted in an ambiguous, unreliable verdict. I would submit that the same situation exists here. And the reason for that is because of the soft transition approach affirmed in People v. Richardson 2008, which also, in Richardson, places a high premium on verdict forms. I mean, part of the reasoning in that case is that verdict forms are significant, and we don't just disregard minor errors, and certainly not omitted ones, as in this case. Unless the court has further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please the court. My name is Ryan Crane, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado in this case. I'll hit three points, and as far as the court wants to go with each one. But first of all, it is the people's position that the record in this case is insufficient and inadequate to allow appellate review of what occurred in the trial court in the first place. Second of all, even if this court is to make findings about what occurred, viewing the appellate record as a whole leads to the conclusion that the defendant's claim of error is not what occurred. The jury did not get the wrong verdict form. And finally, even if this court is to assume or to go along with the defendant's position that the jury got the wrong verdict form here, what it should conclude is there are no grounds for reversal in this case.
Counsel, could I ask a point of clarification? I got a little confused in the last about specifically what was stapled to what. As I read your brief, the correct verdict, I mean, the verdict form for second-degree assault was stapled to the wrong lesser-included offense verdict form. And what should have been given, according to your opposing counsel, was then stapled to another instruction. And we're to draw an inference, and this sort of falls up on Justice Coates' question, we're to draw an inference from the stapling of those that, in fact, because the second-degree assault verdict form was attached to the third-degree assault verdict form, that those were the two forms that were actually tendered to the jury, regardless of what was stated on the transcript by the trial judge.
The way the record is assembled is as follows. You've got, first of all, and going in order downwards, I guess, and assuming that's chronological or however, but as you go through the trial court's case file, first of all, you actually have a question that the jury submitted during deliberations. Next, you have a tendered and refused jury instruction for third-degree assault. That was never given to the jury, never instructed on third-degree assault.
Could you just focus on what was given to the jury? I'm a little confused now. I was on, because to me, the big question is whether or not the LIO verdict was given to the jury. Yeah. Is there any evidence that it was? I thought it wasn't. So the way Justice Marquez phrased her question, it sounded like it was somehow misstapled or something like that.
Chief Justice, I viewing the record as evidence of what the jury received, viewing the trial court case file in that manner, the jury got a lesser included offense verdict form a lesser offense verdict form for third-degree assault on which they were never instructed.
So there's no lesser included according to the judge's instruction, in other words, and the closing argument of the defense, right?
There was a lesser included offense of obstruction, but they were instructed on that properly, on the two offenses, second-degree assault and obstruction, and they got the proper instructions.
Sorry, we're not communicating. Okay. Start over again.
I apologize.
Don't just tell me what does the record show? Does it show evidence of a verdict form being submitted to the jury of the lesser included offense, which was submission, whatever it is, obstructing a peace officer?
No.
How else? We look at the record, and judge said, I'm not going to give you the third degree assault, right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
That's Justice Rice stamp decline, but
right.
It wasn't. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So now what was accepted? So we got the theory and we got the defense theory. Now what does the record show with respect to the jury verdicts? Obviously it shows the verdict of second degree assault, right?
Right.
Okay. What else? What verdicts does it show?
What verdict forms?
Yes, forms.
The trial court case file, according to the defendant, shows that they got the second-degree assault verdict form, which they signed guilty, and a verdict form for third-degree assault, an offense they'd never heard of.
So there's no evidence in the record that they got the correct LIO verdict form, right?
There is evidence, and I would argue that...
Oh, I understand your legal arguments, but...
Factually, viewing the appellate record as a whole, the transcript shows the trial judge...
Yeah, he instructed. We got that.
Instructions, and the trial court read the verdict form.
Okay, he read.
Here they are. I'm giving them to the jury.
I understand. Okay.
It actually appears in the record, right? There is a verdict form in the record for obstruction,
yes,
of a police officer. The question is, did the jury ever get that form?
Correct, because in the record it is stapled, and I think his argument does depend entirely on the staple. It is stapled to the instruction for third-degree assault, which the jury never heard of. That was a tendered and refused instruction.
Just for my benefit, can you go back to where you started, and just what did this look like in sequence?
So you start with going through the trial court case file. You've got tendered and refused instruction on third-degree assault. Stapled to that is a verdict form for obstruction that the jury should have gotten, and I would argue did get. Next, you've got the official verdict, the official instructions. After that, you have the signed verdict form, second-degree assault. And following that, you have a blank verdict form for third-degree assault, which the jury was never instructed on.
So
Those are stapled.
I don't believe those are stapled, actually.
I thought, actually, according to your brief, it suggested that they were stapled.
I don't remember. I think the ones that were stapled were the ones I mentioned before, but I could be wrong. And as I mentioned before, all of that is the jury's instruction that they submitted during deliberations.
So maybe Justice Coates' question is very pertinent then. So the assumption is that because it's stapled to the rejected verdict form, that it wasn't given. Is that the assumption?
Yes. So what we would imagine and what the defense arguing is the trial court clerk had them and staples are, you know, tendered and refused instruction and tendered and refused verdict form, staple, you know, should have been stamped, as Justice Rice pointed out, but is not, so here we are. So my argument is, it's the appellant's burden. It's always the appellant's burden to establish and present this court, an appellate court, with a sufficient and adequate record to, first of all, determine what even happened in the trial court. Otherwise, this court can't get to the question of, does this constitute an error under the law, which no one would dispute, jury should get the right verdict forms. But the next question is harmlessness, and was there plain or harmless error? We can't get there without first determining what actually happened. Till and Velarde talk about that. The Wells case, I cited in the answer brief. It's the appellant's burden to present this court with enough evidence to know what happened. Viewing the appellate record as a whole, however, as I mentioned in the answer brief and as we've already touched on, the transcript should control over what the order of the documents here are. If you're going to view all of it and decide what actually happened in the trial court based on just the appellate record, what this court should find is the evidence leans in favor of saying the jury got the proper verdict forms. It's hard to imagine what better evidence we could
have. Just tell me how you got there.
I got there this way, Justice House. The trial court, we actually have transcribed in this case, the trial court reading the jury the proper instructions and the actual verdict forms and saying, your forms of verdict read like this, second degree assault, we the jury find, blah, blah, blah. Obstruction of a peace officer, we the jury find, blah, blah, blah. I'm now going to hand these official instructions and I'm paraphrasing, I'm going to hand these instructions and verdict forms to the bailiff. You are now released for your deliberations or something to that effect. That is the best evidence we have of what was given to the jury. When we come into question is what happened with the verdict forms and the instructions tendered and refused, accepted, etc., afterwards when they were being assembled or when they were being transmitted to the jury through the bailiff to the judge for reading in open court. That's how I get there. And I would also add, it's supportive of that is the fact that the jurors never expressed any confusion. I mean, they submitted to the trial judge a question about, can we see the video of the defendant assaulting the corrections officer? And the judge said yes, and they viewed the video. So we know that they could communicate with the court if they wanted to. In fact, they were instructed, if you have any questions about the instructions or verdict forms you were given, submit the question to the bailiff. The court can answer your question. They then were polled afterwards, is this your verdict? Yes. No evidence of any confusion of any kind. I'll argue that that also supports the case that this was a harmless error if we believe that the defendant's allegation of fact occurred, but I think it's also supportive of the fact that there was no error in the first place. The jury could have asked a question and shown confusion if it got the wrong form, but it never did.
Before you totally leave that part, could I ask you, is there some mechanism in the appellate rules? Is there something in Rule 10 or something that you think should have been done to straighten out any ambiguity in the record or recreate a part of the record that was missing?
Yes, and I think appellate Rule 10E would have allowed the defendant, if he wanted to go back and get affidavits from the trial judge, the bailiff, the clerk, about what happened in the trial court, what did go to the jury or didn't go to the jury. Perhaps even interview the jurors. I think there might be some leeway within 606B to allow that, but certainly there's provision in the appellate rules to allow this to be clarified instead of having us sit here and determining, well, what might have happened, what might have not happened. We've got the transcript, we've got this, you know, staple, etc.
If we are to agree with you on this threshold issue, but we're unable to determine what the jury actually received.
Yes.
Should we not at least vacate the Court of Appeals published decision that fits into the merits here?
Should the court vacate that portion of the opinion that deals with the merits? I disagree with the court's, I guess I don't know exactly how that would affect the Court of Appeals decision. the Court of Appeals, I believe, was wrong in making the finding that the jury got the wrong verdict form. So I think that should probably be addressed. Whether or not this court would then address the merits and the Court of Appeals addressing of the merits, I honestly don't know how that would work.
What did they base that finding on? That's pretty interesting. They call in somebody and got some testimony or what?
No, they cut, and that's the point. You know, this, we could have done that at the trial court, right? But the court just said, basically kind of laid out my arguments, laid out the defendant's arguments, and said, we agree with LePage. And I don't think that was a correct way to go. I think that the record is very inconclusive for an appellate court to make that finding. But if we want to get into the merits, and I'm happy to discuss the record further or the merits, whatever this court would like, but just to move on while I'm here, if we're going to address the merits, this would not call for reversal under the circumstances of this case, assuming the jury got the wrong verdict form, wrong lesser offense verdict form. They were correctly instructed on the law. They're presumed to have followed the law, to obey their oath, to apply the law properly. The verdict forms had no instructions of law, so there's no incorrect statements of law here at all. And the form they signed listed the correct offense at issue. So the jury had no occasion to even get confused by a lesser offense verdict form.
Can I follow up on that point?
Yes.
Excuse me. Was there a mechanism within the jury instructions that gave them a process? Were they to view those two concurrently, or were they to examine one and then look to the other? I mean, was there a mechanism within the instructions?
I believe there was, because the instructions tell the jury, first of all, if you're not satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of the offense charged, you may consider whether or not he's guilty of the lesser included offense. And then it goes on to define the lesser included offense. Assuming the jurors followed the instructions, they would not even need to look at the instruction for the lesser offense. The instructions also tell the jury to select the appropriate verdict form after reaching their verdict. So following the instructions, the jurors would not have started out with the verdict forms and gotten confused. They would have read through the instructions, and which they'd already heard orally in court, right? And then come to a verdict and then selected the appropriate verdict.
So this was a lesser included, not a lesser not included. So they could only find him guilty of one or the other.
Correct, and they were so instructed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And so the defendant's argument essentially asks this court to disregard all the presumptions that we apply to jurors. The fact that they are believed to have taken their oath seriously, to follow the instructions of law, to apply the burden of proof and unanimity, the fact that they're presumed to be intelligent, reasonable, rational people, that by seeing one verdict form after having heard about the proper offenses discussed in closing arguments, et cetera, would not all of a sudden abandon their role of jurors and say, you know what, let's just convict him, second-degree assault. They'd taken an oath to follow the law. They'd been instructed on the law. They'd heard the closing arguments concerning second-degree assault and obstruction. And so arguing that they didn't do that is an argument for misconduct, juror misconduct, and the defendant presents no evidence of juror misconduct. If the court has no further questions, I'll be happy to thank the court for its time and ask that the decision be affirmed, or that the conviction be affirmed. Thank you.
You probably won't be surprised to know that I always disagree with Mr. Crane's view that the jurors would have had to have committed misconduct, assuming they got the third-degree assault verdict form, to have been confused, to have rendered the instructions ambiguous, and to have rendered the verdict unreliable. This court seems to be much more interested in the record, so I'll just go back and address a few of those points. The transcripts, in fact, do include a lot of evidence that would support verdict form inadvertent misplacement here. For one thing, in the jury instruction conference, as I mentioned before, the prosecutor volunteered to go somewhere else to go find the obstruction form. Shortly thereafter, the trial court judge said, to both parties that he did not intend to give the verdict forms to the jury to review them while he read them aloud in open court prior to sending the jury back for deliberations. And at that time, when the trial court judge read the verdict forms aloud in open court, immediately following that, the judge said, "I'm giving the jury the original verdict form," suggesting that the judge is reading off something other than what he gave the jury. To address your point, Justice Marquez, and solely for the sake of argument, if this court were to find that the record either needs reconstruction or doesn't support the error, then I would submit that the court should vacate the Court of Appeals opinion in its entirety. That opinion would then be based on an error that this court had determined either needed to be reconstructed or didn't exist. So I think the reasoning on the second part of the court's opinion.
But what inference do you draw, that the jury got only one verdict form, or they got two because the second one was the one that shouldn't have been submitted to them, that was rejected?
The way I would record is that the jury got the verdict form clearly for second degree assault and the verdict form for third degree assault, which was not instructed in the case.
Okay, and so they don't return that form. The record doesn't show they've returned that form at all, checked.
There are no marks on that form.
There's no marks on that form.
But you're asking us to draw that inference from the record based on what? In other words, that they got the second degree assault form, obviously, but that they got the third degree assault form instead of the obstruction form based on what? If it's not the stapling, based on what?
Well, it's based on that form appearing immediately with the second degree assault form where you would expect to find the form that went to the jury. It's unmarked. It's unmarked, which tells us nothing. It's assuming something based on the juror's silence, and we don't have anything affirmative of the record that says that this sort of inadvertent error, which this is the case in which you would have the inadvertent error. I mean, these are the signs. You wouldn't necessarily have a trail of breadcrumbs to it.
What is a jury normally expected to do with a second form that they don't use? Or they don't? Are they supposed to sign it one way or the other, or what?
Lesser included offense?
Yeah.
Well, the jury can consider the lesser included offense in tandem before the greater offense.
We've said they can, but the instruction directs, it's an LIO, so the instruction directs them to consider it if they find insufficient evidence on the greater.
Actually, I'm sorry, Chief Justice Bender, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right.
What the instruction says is if you are not satisfied, right, you have a reasonable doubt.
We have a soft verdict or
not guilty verdict.
That's right. We have a soft transition jurisdiction, but
do they just return all of the paper back to the court and it goes into some file? We don't really know what happened other than that, right?
That's correct. And the jurors would return both forms in any event. I see that my time has expired. Unless the court has further questions, I would just ask that the court reverse the Court of Appeals and remand the case to the district court for entry of the obstruction conviction or a new trial at the prosecutor's discretion. Thank you.
Thank both parties for your arguments. The case will be submitted on the